The vision for Avalanche from the very beginning was horizontal scaling and through subnets, which are kind of application-specific blockchains or groups of application-specific blockchains. And we've actually seen subnets even start to progress that are becoming kind of their own holistic ecosystem, like Landslide or Movement or a few other teams. And one of the bigger complaints about subnets that we've had is, hey, there's no native interoperability between them or between subnets and the primary network out of the box. And so Avalanche Warp Messaging, and more specifically Teleporter, is our version of that. And because Avalanche as an ecosystem uses Avalanche Consensus, which has sub-second finality, and Teleporter only requires one block of finality on each, both the sending and receiving part of that relationship, Teleporter should theoretically be the fastest interoperability layer in basically all of blockchain.
Welcome to the ATX DAO podcast, the hub for exploring the forefront of blockchain technology and Austin's Web3 community. Your hosts, Nick, Mason, Luke, and Ash, connect you with innovators within ATX DAO and beyond as we venture into the world of decentralized technology. So crack open a beer and join us for a front row seat to learn about the innovations and trends shaping our digital future. This is the ATX DAO podcast. Hey, we're talking to Matt Schmenk today from the Avalabs team. Matt, really excited to have you on the show. Good to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. My first time here and first time meeting you both. And so super excited for this.
Yeah, so really, really glad to have you there. And then do you want to just kind of kick us off? Just give us a little bit about your background. Tell us kind of what your role is at Avalabs and kind of even before that, how you got into crypto and Web3.
Yeah, so my name is Matt Schmenk. Been here at Avalabs for over 2 years now. I originally got into crypto in the 2020-21 cycle, towards the latter half of 2020, first part of 2021. And I unfortunately got into crypto kind of the very, very normie route, where I was involved within TradFi in kind of my day job. And I saw what the Fed was doing in response to COVID. And I was like, all right, what is the highest beta asset that can hopefully protect me against the wave of inflation that inevitably would come? And that's what that's how I found Bitcoin. And the easiest way to buy at that time was through Coinbase. And so I ran through the KYC process through Coinbase, linked up my bank account, and just started buying and holding primarily Bitcoin, but bought ETH as well. And then I'm trying to remember, I bought one other asset at the time, and I don't even know if the team is still around. And unfortunately, it just went like down only, but most of my holdings were in Bitcoin and ETH. And so I couldn't complain, but I started watching like more and more YouTube videos, podcasts, et cetera. And it really sparked my interest about blockchains and the various pieces of like blockchain infrastructure. And so I actually think after that third asset, I bought Chainlink as well as like my fourth asset, just because I was like, all right, Chainlink sort of has a monopoly on oracles, and oracles are a crucial part of DeFi infrastructure. And so gonna buy some of that just because it seems like they have a good fundamental narrative. And one thing led to another. I was spending almost all of my free time learning. And I was like, in the next progression in your journey should be to go on chain. Like, you need to actually know how to use the actual underlying infrastructure, DeFi protocols, etc. And at that point in time, Ethereum, unfortunately, was $100 minimum per transaction. That was kind of early to mid part of 2021 when NFTs really started popping off. That was when Bored Apes, I think, minted in April of 2021, and they minted
so much gas fees.
Yeah, I think they minted for like ETH, and obviously they went to like 300. But because of that, that started a craze of just tons of projects minting on mainnet, and it made it unusable for non-whales like myself. And so I was like, okay, I can't participate in DeFi if I have $1,000 I'm putting in and a tenth of that is going towards gas depositing into the protocol. And so at the time, and this is probably not going to sound too great for my fellow Avalabs colleagues, I actually used Polygon first. Polygon was like the first on-chain experience I really had. And it's when they were running their liquidity mining program. And so I put a good bit of assets on Ethereum mainnet, bridged them over to Polygon. And at the time it was, I think, Curve, Sushi, and Aave that were the protocols that Polygon were essentially giving Matic rewards to. And started using Polygon and kind of their DeFi platforms, and one thing led to another. And I really like fell in love with the ability for permissionless finance, DeFi, blockchain infrastructure. Just like it really clicked, I think, when I went on chain and started becoming a power user. And from that moment onwards, I kind of became a full-time degen, where I would go to work during the day, but I would not be focused. And unfortunately, want to just spend all of my time on chain, learning about new protocols, using new protocols. And that's kind of what I did. At that time, I was also studying for level one of the CFA. And that's a very rigorous test and process. And so I didn't have a ton of free time, and I was kind of splitting myself multiple ways. And by the end of 2021, I used almost every ecosystem I could. And I was a power user. Avalanche was definitely my main chain, because Avalanche Rush came out kind of summer of that year. And that was the biggest liquidity mining program ever at that point in time. And so I became a very early user of Avalanche through Rush, and started interacting with their team, and really liked the community, the team. And it was just one of the better EVM environments I've ever used, from like a true time to finality, snappiness, relatively cheap perspective. And yeah, one thing led to another. And the next progression in my journey, because I was such a power user and spending almost all of my free time learning about blockchains, was to get a job within the industry. And I interviewed at a variety of kind of Web3 related firms, whether it be research firms, family offices, funds, etc. Avalanche was the only L1 I interviewed with, and luckily I got the job. I didn't want to work somewhere where I didn't believe in kind of the long-term goal, as well as like the underlying technology. And that's why I chose to go and join the Avalabs team. And I got, like I said, I got super lucky that they offered me a position. And it's been now 2 years, and very happy I made that decision.
I love it. No, that's such a, this is such a good ride, and like such a good rabbit hole story. And I think so many people that I know have followed this path for just, you get bitten, right? And it just takes you down this rabbit hole that you can't escape. So you're CFA by day, Degen by night. Love it.
Exactly. And I have a little bit of programming experience as well. I started off in CSE in undergrad for about a year, year and a half. And I've taken a few Solidity courses. So I wanted to really be able to like learn both the technical side of things, but also the financial side, and speak to both. And this role kind of fits that perfectly.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And that's, I can't really relate to that too. So I was about a year behind you in all of that, but that's kind of similar for me. So day job in traditional finance, and just really kind of caught the bug. And Avalanche has been my main ecosystem since the beginning. My first NFT I ever had was on Avalanche. All my DeFi stuff is pretty much through Trader Joe. And so right now what's that?
What was the first NFT? Was it like Avax Trees or Hatchy Pockets or Avax Apes back in the day?
It was the Rooster Mint, so part of the chicken ecosystem. So I did, I minted a rooster through that. They did an egg burn race for it, and I was on an airplane hoping the airplane Wi-Fi would still work while I was, you know, bidding up my egg to get my rooster. And then I ended up getting another one the next day. But yeah, it was, the chicken was my onboarding to it. The role of them, that's how I learned about DeFi, is because they have all their LP mining through their farms and that kind of thing. So yeah. And then kind of the rest is history from there. I'm right now about 2 months away from getting a master's in blockchain and switching over to do something in Web3. Yeah.
That's amazing. The chicken guys have been kind of loyal community members, and we really enjoy them. It's interesting that that was your first kind of NFT on Avalanche. Was that also your first exposure to DeFi here? Because you said like the LPing within that environment. Okay. That's so interesting because DFK, through like their gamification of, believe it was a uni fork, or it might have been a sushi fork back in the day, was a lot of people's first experience within DeFi as well when it was on Harmony and now obviously kind of ported over to a subnet. And so I think it's interesting in the fact that making DeFi fun and gamified really introduces new users. It's a little bit daunting, I think, when you just go to a DEX and you're, it looks, I mean, they used, most DEXs used to have kind of bad front end and UI, but they've gotten much better over the past couple of years. But really finding kind of DeFi elements and learning about it throughout the gamification makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, but it's and that's totally true. I mean, I think just the fun of doing it, like it just I'm just fueling my farm as far as I'm concerned. But then later on, you get on all these Twitter spaces and you have, you know, these GigaBrain guys talking about the details of, you know, all the you know, the protocols and how, like, you know, impermanent loss and all of that. That's how I learned all that stuff. So it's definitely been a cool journey with that.
Well, and I think too, with the like gamifying DeFi, I think there's this sort of abstraction that happens in the brain when you're looking at DeFi and you're like, oh, maybe it's not so much a financial transaction. It's this game I'm playing, right? Or I've got this goal I'm trying to achieve. I'm trying to get this particular yield, or I'm trying to beat somebody else. Like, there's just, I think it kind of lightens that experience for people, and they get out of like financial transaction brain and get into like, let's have fun brain, which you kind of need to approach it that way, or you look at it and you're like, what the fuck am I doing?
And not only that, I feel like unfortunately the industry we're in, it's so new that there is a chance that you could lose a decent bit of money just because of exploits and whatnot. And so I think finding that lighthearted element or component, as well as like that community standpoint where you got on that Twitter Spaces, for instance, is super important. Because then you feel like, let's say something does get exploited, like we're all in this together type of mentality. Like, oh, that really sucks, but I had a lot of like good bit of fun with this community. I got to learn kind of DeFi elements, et cetera. And so you can kind of spin it into a learning experience if something does go wrong, especially if you have others that kind of feel your pain. But I luckily, I think exploits have gotten less and less, it seems like, the past couple of months. And there's more white hack style exploits that have been happening where something might get exploited, but funds might actually not be lost. I think in general within the industry, most people got here around like the ethos of decentralization. But I think in terms of the protection from the centralized components of like on and off ramps, where if someone does exploit a good bit of money, they can't find a way off. Meaning like, hey, I'm going to be blacklisted on Binance, on Coinbase, on every single exchange. Like the bridges are going to blacklist my address. Circle, Tether, they're going to blacklist my address. Although we don't like centralization, sometimes it actually helps us. And so I think through kind of everything that has happened, it's a gift and a curse. And I always like to say like, no one cares about decentralization until it matters, but sometimes it's the opposite as well through centralization, where
So true.
centralization helps us in terms of when an exploit happens, for instance, within our own ecosystem or someone gets phished. A lot of times I get reached out to because we're good friends with Circle. And so then it's like, hey, I unfortunately got phished for a good bit of money. Is there anything Circle can do in terms of like blacklisting this address? And usually it's the process goes something like reporting it to government officials or law enforcement first. Once that claim is in, then talking to a variety of on and off ramps and figuring out ways to essentially turn hopefully a black hat into a white hat style exploit and convince people to give at least a good portion of the money back and let them keep some sort of a reward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've even experienced that within the DAO. You know, we had a person who was hacked, unfortunately, and their DAO NFT was stolen, which is, you know, your pass to the community. And of course, we had to come together as a as a DAO and figure out what we wanted to do with it. But, you know, this person wasn't a noob. They were savvy. And it's still, you know, they got hacked. It happens. So you're right. Like, sometimes that moment of realization on centralization isn't always bad, is an interesting teachable moment, I think, for the entire industry. Like, we want to be very intentional, whether it's, you know, using centralization in a way that helps us move forward or using decentralization in a way that helps us break free. We've got to be very intentional.
Absolutely. Good deal. So Matt, one of the things that I wanted to chat a little bit about, so recently there was a big update to the blockchain with the introduction of Teleporter. Would love to kind of just talk a little bit more about that. I think the subnets are one of the really cool things about Avalanche, and Teleporter, I think, really just helps take that to the next level. Do you want to share just kind of a little bit about kind of what all that includes, and like how Teleporter kind of just kind of affects subnets?
Yeah. So, the vision for Avalanche from the very beginning was horizontal scaling and through subnets, which are kind of application-specific blockchains or groups of application-specific blockchains. And we've actually seen subnets even start to progress that are becoming kind of their own holistic ecosystem, like Landslide or Movement or a few other teams. And so for the most part, I would say our closest competitor always has been Cosmos. And Cosmos personally had the gold standard for interoperability. IBC with Lite clients and how trustless it was. I used to be a Cosmos power user and kind of still am. I have a decent sized Cosmos portfolio, just staking, trying to airdrop farm. And I've really seen the beauty of IBC and how easy it is to hop between a variety of chains within their ecosystem. And so that's kind of been our main competitor. And one of the bigger complaints about subnets that we've had is, hey, there's no native interoperability between them or between subnets and the primary network out of the box. And so Avalanche Warp Messaging, and more specifically Teleporter, is our version of that. And because Avalanche as an ecosystem uses Avalanche Consensus, which has sub-second finality, and Teleporter only requires one block of finality on each, both the sending and receiving part of that relationship, Teleporter should theoretically be the fastest interoperability layer in basically all of blockchain. And essentially what it's doing is leveraging BLS signatures, as well as the P-chain, which is a part of the primary network. The P-chain is the platform chain, which is in charge of subnet coordination, validation, staking, etc. And using a relay network to pass those messages to and from a variety of subnets and subnets in the primary network. And so it's really easy out of the box for basically any new subnet to launch with AWM support. That's Avalanche Warp Messaging. And really will allow kind of a much easier SDK style experience for subnet builders, where it's pick and choose what you want, and subnet, or sorry, AWM can be one of those criteria or selections that they want. And then you have native interoperability within other subnets and the primary network. And another cool thing about AWM, for instance, is the ability to whitelist certain other subnets. And so I'm sure you both have seen kind of our announcements working with a variety of the largest institutions in the world, whether it's JP Morgan Chase, Citi, et cetera. AWM allows teams to only receive messages from certain other subnets. And so let's say Citi doesn't like the compliance team of Bank of America in terms of doesn't meet their own criteria, they can say, all right, no messages received from Bank of America subnet, but they're friendly with JP Morgan. And so then they only accept messages from JP Morgan subnet, for instance. That's kind of something cool in terms of infrastructure that AWM enables. And I think we're going to see more and more relationships like that as subnets kind of proliferate, meaning Gonzilla, Shrapnel, Beam, TSM, et cetera. Hey, I only want to receive messages from this group of five subnets and no one else. These are all gaming subnets. I trust them. We work with them a lot. Or, hey, I kind of want to semi-closed off permissioned ecosystem of that, in terms of, hey, the assets can only be traded on Dexalot subnet for Gunzilla's game or Shrapnel's game, etc. And so I think you're going to see more and more of this semi-permissioned environment, especially if regulation continues to be kind of heavy.
Can I ask a clarifying question about subnets? So with subnet waitlisting, that's you're creating a list of other subnets that you'll accept transactions from or that you can interact with, but there's no inherent privacy protection on that data, is there?
Not yet. So some subnets are looking at privacy layers, and we've supported a few teams in terms of homomorphic encryption or ZK circuits or something like that. And so I think in the future, hopefully we'll have more of an out-of-the-box toolkit also for privacy and encryption that people can easily select. I don't think we're going to build that out. It'll probably be from trusted third parties that we support. But yeah, that is something that a lot of institutions are actually requesting as well. So it's a good question.
Very cool. And I like how there's applications for not just one group. I think you mentioned a couple with financial institutions. I think that's definitely a big use case for it, is how, you know, they'll be able to decide who they want to partner with, that kind of thing. But on the gaming side as well, I think that's typically where I've heard a lot about it, is on the gaming side. I hold a couple of things from Shrapnel and have heard from those guys on. I know, you know, Gunzilla is another big one and that kind of thing. So I just think it's a cool thing how they'll be able to do that, decide who to partner with. You know, that's I think just exciting there. One of the other things that I've heard a lot with the idea of a subnet. So there's obviously, y'all recently announced some other things with meme coins. Cock is one of the big ones that I've been involved in. I know GoGoPool is working on making a subnet for the Cock ecosystem. But that one of the things I think is cool about it is, a lot of times when we talk about meme coins, there's not necessarily like an actual application for them. They're usually just for fun, that kind of thing. But one of the things I think that team is doing that's cool is really actually building a use case for it. They'll be able to use it as gas on that subnet. There'll be people that are building stuff on it in that sense. So just kind of curious your thoughts on kind of how they're taking that in terms of, you know, building for that. And then we can also talk more about Memecoin Rush, which I know is a big thing right now.
Yeah. And so the Cock team, Wojak, who's one of the creators, and sorry, it makes me laugh every time I have to say it. I can be on like a more serious call, and I'm like, I really have to say this right now. Like, what's going on? This is, I can't believe it's my job. But they've essentially decided to give their own meme coin more utility. And through teams like GoGoPool, as well as Venti's Ignite program, there's a variety of liquid stake to Vox assets, and therefore they can bootstrap validators for subnets very, very easily. And so they're working with the GoGoPool team, like you mentioned, to essentially launch a cocknet. And I think this is kind of something unique that we are providing, is very easy to launch blockchains as a service or out of the box, and giving more token utility to a variety of projects that, you know, might just be simple meme coins. And Kimbo, which is another meme coin, is also doing that, as well as Tech. And Kimbo is actually having a KimboNet like hackathon, for instance. So they're trying to encourage people to build and kind of figure out more utility for the meme coins itself. And that is something interesting that we've seen, is just more and more of these meme coins wanting to get kind of heavily integrated within our ecosystem, have more use cases, that sort of thing. And that ignited Memecoin Rush and providing more utility for those memes, for instance.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. And I like how, like, you know, the Avalanche Foundation has really kind of gotten behind it as well. I know that, you know, I think Emmons tweeted about a couple of things that y'all have been doing in that sense. And I think it's neat that y'all are embracing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, like I said, it's really interesting, because this is my second cycle now. And the first cycle I was in, I was strongly against, let's just say, non-fundamental assets, like these culture or community coins. And this cycle, I kind of challenged myself to get past that and follow narratives and have fun and buy NFTs that are meaningless, that sort of thing. And so it's funny also because I think our foundation, like, it's kind of their second cycle as well, if you think about it, where Avalanche really got on the scene last cycle. And they might have realized that as well. Like, hey, like, we're in such a serious industry, yet there's a bunch of degens on chain trading meme coins, having fun. I mean, you said you kind of got your start within the chicken community. And so why do we have to be so serious all the time? Like, we're working with some of the largest banks in the world and brokerages and a bunch of AAA games. Maybe it's time for a little bit of fun during a bull market. And so I think through that, meme coin rush was birthed. And now we're fully embracing it and trying to encourage people to use the chain more and more.
It is kind of interesting how, like, with this push to add utility to meme coins, in the last cycle, it was adding utility to NFTs. And that was the big narrative. And it's like, you're right. It's like, we're having fun. And somehow we kind of feel like we have to back up and justify having fun by dropping some utility on top of these things when maybe we can just have fun too. But yeah, I'm fascinated by the whole meme coin phenomenon. It's pretty crazy to watch unfold. But, you know, when you dig into it, like, psychologically, it makes sense. Because you think about, like, you know, a base layer coin. You think about Ethereum, right? You think about, you know, a simple ERC-20, like, functionally, it's no different than a meme coin, but there's no concentration of energy or attention or excitement or fun around it. And so it's just like this plain vanilla thing that nobody really wants to dig into.
Exactly. And I mean, I think this might have even started with maybe meme stocks like GameStop and AMC and Wall Street Bets back in the day, like, take it to the suits. And, like, who knows, GameStop still might go bankrupt, or AMC or some of the other stocks they supported. So, like, the opposite of fundamental value is what they had, but people still rallied around them and it was something that they could be a part of. And so it kind of makes sense just from an industry perspective and those catching on so much this cycle, especially in my opinion. I think people have realized that when the market is hot, sometimes you just have to have fun, and meme coins are like the epitome of fun in blockchain.
Yep, absolutely. So do you want to talk a little bit more about meme coin rush and kind of what all that entails from an Avalabs and Avalanche perspective?
Yeah. So meme coin rush to us was about finding various sinkholes or giving people reasons to hold their meme coins versus sell them. And currently, we're working with a variety of announced partners like Trader Joe, Staycut, through Uniswap, and then a few others that will be announced sometime in the next week. And just really allowing for a variety of flavors for people to deposit their meme coins within. So Trader Joe is doing single-sided meme coin vaults, for instance, in which people won't suffer any sort of impermanent loss, and they're earning AVAX just for staking their meme coins within these vaults, which provides another form of utility as well as yield for these meme coins. And then Staycup, for instance, is leveraging Uni and their concentrated liquidity DEX and kind of providing concentrated liquidity automation for those price ranges and juicing the yields within those pairs, generally paired against AVAX as well. And so for us, meme coin rush was figuring out a way to give extra utility to these meme coins and really ensure that people want to diamond hand and hold them versus just sell or trade these meme coins. And so it'll be interesting to see if it pays off. I think it will. Also, the foundation has publicly announced they're buying meme coins, and there's a list of their holdings. I think it's like Cock, Tech, Kimbo, NoChill, and Gecko Inu. So they're even kind of trying to juice the price action as well. Our community likes to joke around and say, don't fight the Fed, because the foundation is bidding. And I mean, if you think about, like, the Federal Reserve, for instance, they've bought assets in the past as well in terms of, like, mortgage-backed securities and done quantitative easing and whatnot. And so that's what our community has really rallied around. Don't fight the Fed, and the Fed being the foundation. So
that's awesome.
So let me ask a dumb question, Matt. What's the incentive for Avalabs to run something like Memecoin Rush? Like, is it a marketing tactic? Is it a customer acquisition, like getting people to chain and getting them to spend more time on Avalanche?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all of the above. Degens using actual blockchains, whether it's the C chain, subnets, et cetera, helps our on-chain metrics. And I think a lot of research firms publish on-chain metrics and kind of bullish theses when on-chain metrics are good. And so it's kind of a virtuous cycle of improving your on-chain metrics. Therefore, hopefully price might increase and therefore it's kind of a continual effect. And to be completely honest, it's not that different from liquidity mining and Avalanche Rush to start with. That was, like you mentioned, customer acquisition costs and encouraging people to use DeFi and blockchains in general. This is doing exactly that. And I could argue that meme coin holders actually use blockchains more than just your stereotypical DeFi user. As a DeFi user, if I trust the protocols I'm depositing into, I might, make a transaction once every couple of days. Like my assets are gaining yield. Why do I need to worry about that? It's kind of like having a bank account versus a meme coin holder or trader. You're constantly buying, selling, et cetera. And so I think this is going to provide a ripe environment for both traders and community members alike, as well as people that just want to use DeFi. It's kind of a trifecta of various communities coming together and using Avalanche, hopefully in abundance.
And I assume like, that makes total sense. I assume like the, you know, kind of bolstering the on-chain metrics through this usage coming from the meme coin side, like I have to imagine that's advantageous for Ava Labs when you go out to pitch a more corporate client too, right? So it's like, you know, it's like YouTube juicing view metrics so they can go out to a big ad partner and say, look how many views we have.
I mean, you're exactly correct. Look at how many users, transactions, volumes, et cetera.
Right.
It's
right.
Like I said, it's a virtuous cycle that self-proliferates and continues to get better.
For sure. Fascinating.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And I love how those two things can kind of live together there too. So you can have the fun side with everything with the meme coins, NFTs, but you also have, you know, like to your point, like a really, you know, serious side of the business with, you know, like Evergreen, I think is a big, yeah, big thing that y'all offer there. Can you want to talk just a little bit about kind of how those solutions like can work for different businesses? You mentioned some of the financial institutions, but you know, any other like applications you're seeing for that kind of thing?
Yeah, so essentially what Evergreen subnets are out-of-the-box KYC or KYB permission subnets with other kind of parameters that people can select, whether it's on and off ramps, compliance tooling, etc. And really making sure that whoever wants to build using blockchains feel comfortable doing exactly that. And so whether it's using chain analysis and TRM, on a subnet, ensuring you're not allowing anyone that is OFAC sanctioned to use that subnet. That's an Evergreen subnet, for instance. And we allow for whitelists in terms of addresses in which someone might require everyone to run through like their own KYC process to allow access for that subnet. And so we have Spruce, which is kind of that sandbox environment for institutions to experiment in a permission testnet environment and kind of get comfortable using blockchain infrastructure, on-chain dApps, that sort of thing. And I mean, you could even expand this to gaming, for instance. You could, I mean, most games I've played don't require KYC. Most of them are either like social login or email login, but that's something exactly that you could have. That could be essentially an Evergreen subnet that requires you to have a Twitter account, your own email account, and a Twitch account. And it only whitelists your address if you have all of those three and essentially link them to like a login. And then it creates maybe either a new address or you can bring your own address in terms of like a wallet. And then they'll let you transact within that subnet environment. So I think there are some very interesting use cases that are even outside of the institutional world like you mentioned.
No, on the institutional side, is the majority of what you're seeing in terms of interest related to RWAs or... how does it break down?
Yeah. So we're seeing kind of all of the above. I think RWAs really started their wave of adoption for this cycle through tokenized treasury bills and kind of yield bearing stable coins that achieve that yield through those tokenized treasury bills. But yeah, we're seeing RWAs like tokenized diamonds, we just announced, for instance, as well, yeah, as tokenized racehorses or tickets to a concert, or Minuswap is doing tokenized shoes. So not just your stereotypical RWAs that you think of when you say the word RWA with like tokenized real estate, but even some alternative assets. And the institutional clients we're working with, like JP Morgan and Citi, for instance, they're not even really doing, I mean, it's still RWAs, but it's not your stereotypical RWAs like what BlackRock just announced they're doing in terms of working with Ondo and sure. the tokenized T-bills. Citi is doing an on-chain like FX POC in terms of reference rates and pinging those and kind of what blockchain brings in terms of efficiency in that industry. And JP Morgan actually is doing an MVP for wealth management of tokenized assets. Like, hey, this client wants to swap these tokenized, these 50 tokenized stocks for these 30 tokenized assets in one atomic transaction. That's completely possible if you use blockchains with interoperability solutions. So yeah, we've seen a lot, to be completely honest.
When you're sitting in those conversations, I assume you're in those conversations, right? Some of those business development conversations.
Yeah. Yep.
How many times have you found yourself across the table from somebody who is a business in the front, but you know they're a degen, or you ended up talking about meme coins?
Oh, it happens so much. I mean, it happens even in person, where the first time I actually met the Fidelity team was at Breckenridge after last seat Denver. And they rented like a ski house. And of course, like we went and got a few drinks during the week, kept it pretty business oriented. And then at Breckenridge, it was funny just to see the other side of them having fun, going skiing and talking about a variety of our DeFi applications with them and whatnot. And so there, I would say it's a much higher percentage than you would ever think for these degens in terms of like which are on chain and which are not. It's semi easy to spot once you meet them, but
yeah,
there are quite a bit. So
funny.
That's awesome. Good deal. So Matt, this has been great. Getting a chance to chat with you a bit and kind of hear about some of the great things that are happening at Avalabs. If folks kind of want to stay connected with you and with Avalabs or just Avalanche in general, what are kind of the best ways for folks to stay connected and learn more?
Yeah, so we have basically all social media, whether it's Twitter, YouTube, Medium, our own blog, etc. And following the AVAX Twitter account, the foundation, Avalabs, a variety of Avalabs employees, protocols within our ecosystem. And now we even have kind of vertical based Twitter accounts for more specific news. If you only want to see gaming related items or DeFi or culture, like NFTs or tokenized music or something like that. And so basically all of the above, we have a very amazing social media team, and I work with the marketing and social media team almost every day. And so they maintain those environments and ensure that people get the information that they seek.
Yeah. And so, and if they want to follow you, what's the best way to keep in touch with you?
Yeah. So let me double check my Twitter. I think, so it's at Matt Schmank. So my first name and then last name is my Twitter account. And that's probably the best way. I also have LinkedIn. For people that get a little closer with me, I'll share with them my Telegram, perhaps. But yeah, I think Twitter, for the most part, is the best.
Very good. Awesome. Well, we'll be sure to link all that in the show notes so that folks can check that out. But Matt, thanks again so much for spending some time with us. Really great conversation, and can't wait to see what else is in store for both the subnets as well as what we talked about with meme coins.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and have a nice rest of your week.